Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It's always great catching up with you at the end of the week. Hope it's been a great week for all of you. It's certainly been a waterlogged week here in New York, and I know that many folks across the country have been experiencing some really wacky weather. I think it's almost time to build an ark. Anyway, my name is Mike Cutler. As I pointed out at the top of this program, I am a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And ever since 9/11, I have taken my show on the road, in a manner of speaking, determined to provide my perspectives and insights that I've acquired within my career, 30 years worth, with the old INS, Immigration and Naturalization Service, an agency that no longer exists, but whose mission, at least in theory, is now being done by various component agencies of the DHS, an agency that I have unfortunately come to the conclusion should be renamed the Department of Homeland Surrender. Rather than get too heavily into my own personal background, if you want to find out a little bit more about me, I would suggest two terrific websites that you may want to go visit. My own personal website, michaelcutler.net, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. The other website is that of Californians for Population Stabilization, terrific organization headquartered in the beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, as they always like to remind me, where generally the weather is better than it is in New York, especially in the wintertime. But, of course, this is the end of the spring. We're heading towards summer. So both parts of the country can get decent weather, but I still think they usually have the edge over us. So Californians for Population Stabilization at capsweb.org, great organization, proud to be a part of it. Check out their website again, capsweb.org. There's a lot to talk about, and here we are. And if you want to call in, by the way, and join the conversation, the phone number to call is 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. You know, the focus has been on so many issues. It's really hard to know what the focus is when you turn on the news and look at what's happening in Washington. It is such an amazing three-ring circus, but of course my focus will be on immigration, the fact that the Senate voted to go forward with the debate on comprehensive immigration reform, really a frightening piece of legislation. And I don't say this because of xenophobia. I say it because the people that favor it are utterly ignoring the recommendations and findings of the 9/11 Commission. They are utterly ignoring their oaths of office. They are utterly ignoring the needs of their fellow Americans. Now, why am I saying it? It's simple. America's immigration laws were enacted to protect the lives and jobs of Americans. In fact, to protect the lives of all people who are present within the United States. I don't want to get heavily into the law, but if you go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, pardon me, or you can go to my website, michaelcutler.net. I write about this frequently because I'm trying to get people to understand why we have immigration laws. Because if you listen to the president, you would have no idea why we have immigration laws. The immigration laws, as articulated in that section of law, Title 8, Title 8 is that whole body of law, the Immigration and Nationality Act, Section 1182 deals with categories of aliens who are ineligible to receive visas, ineligible to enter the United States. It's kind of like you go to the peephole, some guy knocks on the door, you say who's there, you ask him a couple of questions, you don't like what he looks like, you don't like the answers to your questions, and you tell him to keep on trucking because you're not going to open the door. Well, that decision comes down to that section of law. And it starts out by categorizing among the reasons why an alien should be kept out of the United States is an alien who suffers from a dangerous communicable disease. Next is an alien who suffers extreme mental illness and is violent or a sex offender, you know, the pedophiles, the rapists, and so forth. And then we get to the criminals, the drug traffickers, the human smugglers, the members of criminal organizations, the murderers, people that are involved with white-collar crime, human rights violators, war criminals, spies, terrorists. And then we move on down the line to aliens who would become public charges, aliens who would act as an immigrant, although they're not entitled to, meaning that they would not leave the country. They would take jobs that they're not supposed to take, jobs that are so important, especially today when so many American and lawful immigrant workers are out of work, unemployed, or underemployed. So many Americans living below the poverty line. So many Americans losing their homes to foreclosure. So many Americans losing their grasp on middle class and even solvency. We live, no one needs to tell you this, this is not a news bulletin, we live in a difficult time. It's a time where jobs are hard to come by, finding enough money to support yourself is difficult in many cases. So this is the backdrop for the immigration laws that the president makes an absolute mockery out of, and not just him, and it's not just the Democrats. You know, I was just on a radio show and the guy was talking about the Democrats. Let's be very honest, folks. Marco Rubio is a Republican. Marco Rubio seemingly could care less about the immigration laws. He says one thing and does another. He stands there and says, this is the 21st century. We need immigration laws that keep out the bad guys. And then he says, let's have comprehensive reform. Well, wait a moment. This doesn't make any sense. Comprehensive immigration reform would provide, according to Mr. Rubio, and the folks on the other side and the president. You see, it's both sides of the aisle. We didn't get into this mess because of one party, but I will tell you that while this country is now going the wrong way on a one-way street, for the most part, it's the president who is standing the hardest on that gas pedal, flying against all common sense the wrong way on that one-way street. But, you know, look at Marco Rubio saying, we're going to take care of these folks. Well, here's the problem. There are not enough resources in the federal government to do face-to-face interviews with the aliens that are being provided with temporary status under the Deferred Action Program, the Dreamers. Right now, the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, USCIS, is processing the application of these so-called Dreamers, supposedly their children, even though the age cutoff is 31. We have no way of knowing who they are. We have no way of knowing how long they've been here. We have no way of knowing anything really about them. But they fill out an application. They mail it in. And USCIS, if they approve the application, sends them an identity document. Now, when they say if they approve the application, a couple of weeks ago, according to the Washington Times, the approval rate was at greater than 99%. So what kind of scrutiny do you think the applications are getting? Understand something. There's no interviews. There's no interviews. Comprehensive reform would be the exact same sort of thing where people would mail in the application. They would be processed without walking into an immigration office to be interviewed. This is a prescription for a catastrophe. This is absolutely a prescription for a catastrophe. And yet, this is exactly what this administration is doing. And you look at this and you say to yourself, why in the world would you want to proceed in this kind of an absurd manner? The 9/11 Commission was convened ostensibly to make certain that we never again were attacked or that we minimized the potential. When the Space Shuttle Challenger blew up at launch, they convened a panel. The purpose for the panel was to figure out what happened to Challenger, why did it blow up. When Space Shuttle Columbia burned up on entry, again, they convened a board of inquiry, they convened a panel to figure out why it disintegrated on reentry. When an airplane crashes, the NTSB comes out, National Transportation Safety Board comes out, and they do an investigation. They first want to make sure that a terrorist didn't do it, and then they want to make certain, was it pilot error? Was it an equipment failure? Was it a maintenance issue? Because they don't want airplanes dropping out of the sky. So every time an airplane, whether it's a single-seater or a two-seater, the kind of stuff I used to fly when I was a kid, the Pipers and the Cessnas, or if it's a 747, no matter how big, whether it's a helicopter or a jet, doesn't matter. An airplane falls out of the sky in the United States, or if it falls out of the sky anywhere in the world and American citizens are on board, the NTSB is there. Their so-called go team shows up, and they do everything they have to do to try to figure out why the airplane made a big hole in the ground. Makes perfect sense. The 9/11 Commission similarly was convened, ostensibly, to make certain that the United States addressed the vulnerabilities that enabled the terrorists who attacked us on 9/11 so that we could plug the holes. You know, my dad used to say, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. Or I think it was Albert Einstein who said that insanity was doing the same thing the same way and expecting a different result. So the 9/11 Commission came out with a bunch of findings, and the staff on the 9/11 Commission wrote a report. And it's a thick report that's available online for free. It's amazing what you can get for free if you want to educate yourself. Perhaps you should send the link to your congressman and suggest that they read the damn thing. I know that the folks over at CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, sent eyeglasses to the members of the Senate and said, read the bill. Read the bill. Half the time, three-quarters of the time, the members of Congress think it's beneath them. They have the kids who work for them. And forgive me, because I have friends in Washington, and I have nothing but respect for them. But when you have people that have gotten out of college recently doing the work on behalf of the member of Congress, it may lose something in translation. It may lose something in translation. Now, I understand that members of Congress are inundated with all kinds of bills coming at them at warp speed, and if you're in the minority, the trick played on them by the majority, and by minority and majority, we're not talking about race here, folks, just so you know, in the Senate, the Democrats are in control, so they're the majority party, the Republicans are the minority party. In the House, it's the opposite. So the majority gets to have it their way. Okay, it's like that hamburger joint. Have it my way? Well, they have it their way. So they will drop an 800-page document on their colleague's desk the night before a vote and say, here's the bill, read it, we vote at 10 a.m. Well, who in the world could go through 800 or 900 or 1,000 pages of a bill in a matter of a couple of hours and then make an intelligent decision? This is the foolishness that passes for governance in Washington. If you wonder why, according to what they just said on the radio, Congress has a 10% approval rating, understand what's going on. This is not what the founding fathers had in mind. It's an infuriating situation. And of all the people who lose, we the people are most likely to lose the most. And we are. And we are. But so in any event, you have this horrible situation where nobody knows what's going on except the people that are in control, for the most part, and the way that decisions are made is literally fatally flawed all too often. But what I want to do right now, and I want you to listen to this, because, you know, I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission, and they really looked at the immigration component to the whole deal. And that's what's so really amazing about that. Because first of all, they made the point that the terrorists couldn't have attacked us if they couldn't have come in here. And early on in the report, in the preface, in fact, to the report, they talked about how it might seem obvious, but border security needs to be seen as a major weapon in the counterterrorism arsenal. Boy, that's hard to figure out, but yet, when Janet Napolitano says the border is secure, and you look at the documentaries, whether it was the one done by Dennis Lynch or it's the one that was done by my friends in North Carolina, Mark Hager, and those terrific folks, you look at this and you realize that the border is ridiculous. But it's not just the Mexican border. The Canadian border is problematic. We have a seaport. We have international airports. We have people pouring into this country each and every day, mostly for legitimate reasons, but many, unfortunately, for less than legitimate reasons. And certainly people who run the border are problematic because you don't know why they're running the border. It's hard enough to figure out why someone comes here legally. Now imagine the person that knows that they fall under one or more categories of excludable aliens, so they sneak in surreptitiously. And we're being told that the solution to people who evade the process that was designed to protect us is to give them identity documents. We don't know who they really are. We don't know why they evaded the inspections process. Maybe they're just coming to work illegally. They're desperate and so forth. Or maybe there's something more sinister. Maybe they committed a heinous crime in their home country and they're on the run. Maybe they're coming here because they're a member of a criminal or a terrorist organization and they're planning to ply their so-called trades in our country against Americans. We don't know. And what we don't know can hurt us. So the solution that Mr. Rubio comes up with is to say, well, we got to know who's here, but if you're here, we'll give you an identity document. Really? And then he says, you know what? We're going to security screen you. We're going to do it. Security clearance, but screening, right? Well, you know what the screening process is? They run the name that the alien puts on the application. So let's say that this alien's name shows up on every terror watch list in the world, and he knows it, or she knows it. So they use a different name. They say, my name is Donald Duck. My name is Mickey Mouse. My name is John Smith. Now, if they've never been fingerprinted in the United States, and they've never been fingerprinted in a country whose standards are up to ours, you know, first world countries, basically. There's many third world countries, the fingerprinting process, if it's even done at all, is a joke. Or if the country is associated with terrorists, we may not find out, if I can get the words out, that this person really has problems in his background. So if the fingerprints come back clean, most likely meaning that they haven't been fingerprinted here or in some European country or perhaps Mexico, but not always, because I have my doubts. And guess what? That person will get a new identity, compliments of the U.S. government. The document they get will immediately enable them to get driver's licenses and social security cards, open bank accounts, and travel freely around the United States. And Mr. Rubio said, well, we're going to put them on the back of the line. That sounds so good, doesn't it? We're going to put them on the back of the line. And my question is, the back of the line for what? United States citizenship? Only about a half of the aliens who get green cards ever apply for citizenship. So what line are we talking about? You know, the old joke, why did the chicken cross the road? Well, this isn't a joke, but why did the illegal alien cross the border? And generally, it's to get a job. Now, it may be simply the only reason that the person came here. It might be as an embedding tactic to hide in plain sight by taking a job. But the point is, it starts with a job. The illegal alien crossed the border to get a job. So, how long is the line for that alien to start working in the United States? And the answer is not 12 years. Well, it's going to take them 12 years to become a citizen. No. They will, within days, get permission to work. That's the line that counts for these folks. They will be online to immediately bring family members to the United States once they get lawful status. That's the line that counts. They can bring their family here, and they can work in the United States. That's the line. Mr. Rubio says, well, you know, they're not eligible for federal benefits. Tell you what, you come to New York, you apply for welfare, they will not ask you about your immigration status, and it's not just New York. Other states are just like it. Other cities are just like that. They are sanctuaries. They won't notify the police that you're an illegal alien, and now these folks wouldn't be illegal anymore anyway. And people say to me, well, you know, Mr. Cutler, if we had mandatory E-Verify, everything would be terrific. Well, understand what that means, though. An alien who is processed for comprehensive reform would immediately get a document that enables them to easily fly through the E-Verify program. So legalization would basically gut immigration law enforcement. It won't matter that they were here illegally. Now, think of what we don't know. We don't know their real name. We don't know how long they're here. The guy that says, what's the cutoff date? 3 years ago? I've been here 4 years. How in the world can you make inquiries to determine how long someone is here when the person likely used multiple false identities? And no face-to-face interview. And not enough agents to go out and knock on doors and show people photographs and say to them, do you know this guy? What name do you know him as? And how long have you known him? Pretty basic stuff. But you know something? If you're dealing with 11 million, 20 million, 30 million, 35 million people, How many interviews do you think a couple of thousand agents can conduct? How many investigations? And the answer is they would not be able to do it. They would simply have to take the word of what the alien says he would provide or she would provide, some rent receipts, some other bills or whatever, easy enough to borrow from somebody else. And it's the game of don't ask, don't tell. Basically, it's the honor system for people whose identities and motives for coming here are unknown, unknowable, and unverifiable. This is a prescription for a catastrophe. And here we are. So we have this problem where we don't know who these people are or why they're here, but we're going to give them lawful status. But yet, and this is what blows my mind, Mr. Rubio is saying, well, wait a minute, you know, we're going to put them on the back of the line and everything is going to be great. It's not going to be great, and what it's going to do isn't dangerous. Because I want to read to you two paragraphs that were contained in the 9/11 staff report on terrorist travel, 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Here's a paragraph that can be found on page 47. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and Landmarks plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agricultural Workers Program after falsely claiming that he picked beans in Florida. Mahmoud Salome, who rented the truck used in the bombing, overstayed his tourist visa. He then applied for permanent residency under the Agricultural Worker Program, but was rejected. Ayad Mahmoud Ismail, who drove the van containing the bomb, this is, we're talking now about the 93 bombing at the World Trade Center, by the way, when they talk about the van containing the bomb, took English language classes at Wichita State University in Kansas on a student visa, and after he dropped out, he remained in the United States out of status. Think about that. So now let's look at what's on page 98, where they talk about this issue about immigration benefits. Now, what do we mean by an immigration benefit? An immigration benefit is whenever USCIS gives an alien permission to extend his period of stay in the United States, permission to change his status so perhaps he can attend school, or gives him a green card, or provides him with United States citizenship through naturalization. These are what are known as immigration benefits. So now understand how important immigration benefits were to the terrorists. Okay, catch this. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11 hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. At the foundation of the embedding strategy that not only the 9/11 terrorists, but other terrorists, in fact, the 9/11 Commission identified a grand total of 94 terrorists, of whom 59, or about two-thirds, used immigration benefit fraud, lying on those applications, to embed themselves in the United States. And right now, USCIS, Citizenship and Immigration Services, a component of the Department of Homeland Surrender, is doing what? They're processing hundreds of thousands of applications for immigration benefits without a face-to-face interview, and the approval rate, according to the Washington Times, stands at greater than 99%. Did anybody bother to read the 9/11 Commission report? We are handing out the keys to the kingdom to people without a face-to-face interview. Think of what happens when you rent a car. I have a wonderful car dealership here in New York. And when I rent a car, they have a car rental agency right in their service department. So if my car is going to be overnight and I need to take care of some stuff, I rent a car and now I'm free to drive around and do what I have to do while they work on my own vehicle. They need to see a driver's license and proof of automobile insurance. They'll check my credit reference. They make certain that my license hasn't been suspended. They make certain that I don't have a bunch of moving violations and so forth. And only then, when they realize that, nope, Mike Cutler's not a scofflaw, he doesn't have all these speeding tickets, he's not running red lights, his credit thing comes back okay, only then do they hand you the keys to the kingdom. But, or the keys to the car, rather, not the keys to the kingdom. America's handing out the keys to the kingdom like nothing. Fill out an application, and here's your identity document in whatever name you want. And meanwhile, what did they say? What did they say? The act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country till the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. Execute an attack. How critical is it that we adjudicate those applications where there's integrity? This is nothing short of national security. And it's a joke. But it gets worse. And let me tell you how worse it gets. And again, I would remind you, if you want to call in, you're welcome to join me, 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. How bad is it? Let me tell you how bad it is. We know that there was a guy by the name of Wissam Alush. I spoke about him previously. He is alleged by the FBI to have lied on his application for United States citizenship. That's what they're saying in the indictment. An indictment doesn't mean he's convicted. This is just what the FBI is claiming. The FBI claims that he had been a member of Hezbollah, which, of course, is a terrorist organization sponsored by Iran. Think of how much attention we're paying to Hezbollah and Iran and the threat that they pose to us. We know that there are Iranian shock troops entering the United States each and every week, flying directly from Tehran, Iran, into Caracas, Venezuela. So we keep hearing about Hezbollah, we keep hearing about the Quds, the shock troops, the Iranians. So here's a guy who allegedly, again, I say this advisedly, he's not been convicted of anything, but he's been indicted, he's been charged with lying on the application, concealing membership in Hezbollah, and lying about his marital status when he applied for citizenship. And they're saying, okay, these are material facts. Now, this guy got citizenship, and a couple of years ago, this is astonishing, he had gotten a job, apparently, working for a private contractor in Iraq, and guess what his job was? He was a translator. So think about a translator and what his job is. As an immigration agent, I often use translators because you would have people from the four corners of the planet. Very often they spoke languages that I couldn't understand or speak. So the translator becomes your ears, your eyes, and your mouth. You ask the question, the translator translates the question, the guy responds to the translator tells you what the guy said, and then you write it down, or it's being tape recorded. So think of the danger that this guy may have posed if, in fact, what the FBI claims about him is true, and only the wheels of justice, as they turn ever so slowly, will ultimately come up with a conclusion as to where we are with this character. But let's say that the FBI is right. As a translator, he gets to see who the agents are, the intelligence people. This is in Iraq, in a war zone. He gets to see who the suspected terrorists are, if that's who was being interrogated. He gets to filter the information going back to the people doing the interrogation. So if the guy says, I want to cooperate, and the translator says, he told you to go to hell, you don't know that the guy just said, I want to cooperate. You're thinking that the guy said, go to hell. So it's a blind alley. On the other hand, the guy might be saying, go to hell, and this guy gives you some BS story. Oh, this is here and that's there. Something known in intelligence as disinformation. Now, if there's somebody who's cooperating with the authorities, the translator gets to see the cooperator. So now this guy's life is in danger and his family is in danger, because if you have a translator who's on the other side, you can go back to his people and say, yeah, that guy Mohammed over there, yeah, he wants to cooperate with the Americans. He's a problem. and suddenly this guy's family gets wiped out or he gets wiped out. This is dangerous. I'm not saying that this happened here. I want to be very, very clear. I'm not making any accusations. That's not how it works, and that wouldn't be fair. And I have no facts to say that that's what happened in this case, in this case. But I do want you to understand that if the FBI indicted this guy for lying on his application, how in the world did he get a security clearance to work for the Department of Defense? And you can see what's now happening with this knucklehead that's running around in Hong Kong talking about the surveillance programs in the United States. And by the way, I find it remarkable that so many conservatives love to privatize, and I've always felt most comfortable in certain positions of having dedicated federal employees or state employees, law enforcement, intelligence services. I feel far more comfortable with a sworn officer than some government contractor. But this government contractor was acting as a translator, and my concern, again, there's no evidence whatsoever that he did anything like that, but if he was a bad guy, he would have been in the position where he could have done that. That's what's disturbing. That's what's disturbing, that the system by which he was vetted, if you believe the FBI indictment, was flawed. And this is not an isolated case. Time and again, we have seen this. And here we're talking about an honest-to-God background investigation, at least I hope we are. I held a top-secret clearance as an agent, and every 5 years they had to re-up my clearance. And you sat down with an investigator, or sometimes two investigators. The question and answer session could have lasted for hours. Then they interview the people you work with. Then they go out into the neighborhood and interview your neighbors and former colleagues. And that's what a background investigation looks like, and it takes months, and it's expensive. A background check is nothing. It takes seconds. You run a name, you run fingerprints, and it's good or bad, thumbs up or thumbs down, period. To compare a background check with a background investigation, the best way I can give you a description. You know, we've all seen the guy that sits there in the mall with the blood pressure machine. You stick your arm in there, and they tell you what your blood pressure is. That check of your blood pressure is not the same as a physical being done by a doctor in his office, or especially if you go into a hospital for a workup where they take blood and they do x-rays and they do an EKG and they do all these other great tests. And then they say, okay, Charlie, you're in great shape. You know, taking your blood pressure doesn't tell you whether you're well or not. It just tells you what your blood pressure is. That's the comparison that you need to think about when you hear this nonsense about we're going to do a background check. It is next to worthless. Now, here's a couple of questions that I want you to consider that nobody is asking, folks. Here's some questions. No one's asking them. First of all, how did the Mexican border become the be-all and end-all of immigration, what's right and what's wrong with the system? Obviously, that's an absurdity. We have at least 5 million illegal aliens in the United States who didn't run the border. They came through ports of entry. About 6-7 years ago, there was a very disturbing report. It was in the Washington Post, talking about how the GAO did an investigation and found that Citizenship and Immigration Services claimed to have lost 111,000 immigration files relating to all sorts of applications for benefits, including 30,000 aliens who were naturalized, and the adjudicators didn't even have the immigration file in front of them. 30,000 aliens processed for citizenship, the key to the front door, without giving the immigration file to the officer making the decision. This is the same system that would be called into action to deal potentially with, I don't know, 10 million, 20 million, 30 million, 35 million. No one knows. And there's nobody there saying, well, if we hit 30 million, we're going to stop. There's no mechanism like that. If 50 million show up, they'll process all 50 million. If you're sitting in the highway wondering how in blazes you're going to get from point A to point B because all these cars are here. You know, I remember one day I was sitting in traffic with my wife, and she said, where did all these cars come from? And I pointed to a Mercedes and said, well, that probably came from Germany, and that Toyota came from Japan, or at least the company is from Japan. It was probably made in Ohio or whatever, but that was always my joke. But understand what the influx of aliens, and believe me, we're getting inundated. It's not what Napolitano says. It's what the Border Patrol says that I'm willing to believe. And when you see what's in these documentaries, whether it's what Mark Hager and his folks did, or what was done and they come to America, These documentaries show the border. That border is wide open. It's a joke. It's a speed bump. So you have people charging the border. Think of the impact this will have on infrastructure, on schools that are already overcrowded, on hospitals, emergency rooms, commuter buses and subway trains and water supplies and electricity and home heating oil and gasoline for your car. I mean, this is a huge impact. And that was why I wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago where I said that an environmental impact study should be a prerequisite to even taking up comprehensive immigration reform because of that. I see we have a caller on the line. Let's see who we've got. You're speaking to Mike Cutler. Who's calling?
Hello, Mike Cutler. This is Steve Salvey, founder of Ohio Jobs and Justice Pact.
Steve, it's so good to hear your voice. Happy Friday to you. And let me wish you and everybody out there, by the way, coming up this weekend, a happy Father's Day.
Thank you.
How are you doing today?
Well, Mike, I'm doing terrific, other than that the U.S. seems to be selling the United States of America out.
Well, you know, it's funny because I also wrote an article that I called The Fencing of America, and I wasn't referring to, like, the border fence, but fencing as in the sale of stolen property. Doesn't that seem to be an apt analogy?
You know, unfortunately, too true. I was really disappointed that how the vote went on Tuesday for the motion to proceed. And unfortunately, you know, I'm from the state of Ohio, and our two U.S. senators, Rob Portman and Sherrod Brown, voted in favor of that, and in my opinion, against the best interests of the American people and Ohioans.
Remarkable, isn't it? And then, you know, they just voted, I think it was yesterday, that they would not have to even address border security as all that was, as if that was the be-all and end-all before they implement comprehensive reform. So they've even taken that meager illusion of anything meaningful and threw that under the bus and said, well, we'll get to it when we get to it. And that's why Neil Cavuto went nuts and said, I have to rush into the studio. And I was happy to be on with Neil. It's always a pleasure to join him. He's one of the few TV journalists who's willing to tackle the issue. Most people want to turn a blind eye to it, if you haven't noticed.
Right. And I don't know if you were able to see what or listen to what Ann Coulter had said in her interview. I think that was with Hannity, and she really hit the nail on the head. You know, whatever comes out of the, you know, the Senate or the House, it's not going to be good. And when they go into conference committee, there's going to be a deal made, which is why bills in both houses must go down.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, I was so incensed because yesterday morning I was watching Mueller, you know, the head of the FBI, at that hearing. Did you watch that hearing by any chance?
Well, I saw part of it after the fact, and very disappointing, but I'll listen to your comments about it.
Well, it was remarkable because one of the members of the committee that was holding the hearing hammered Director Mueller and said, how many agents have been assigned to investigate the Internal Revenue Service and the allegation that they treated political conservatives disparately? And he said, I don't know. And he said,
how can that be?
Right? And then they asked him, who was the lead agent? I don't know. How many agents are going to be assigned? I don't know. What has been required thus far? Well, it's an ongoing investigation. Well, has anybody been subpoenaed? Have any records been? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, holy smoke. This guy's the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And, you know, it was funny. My wife was watching this, and she said, you know, he normally has great presence, Robert Mueller, and he does.
Mm-hmm.
And she said he did not have much presence. He looked super uncomfortable. I said, yes, because a guy who runs the elite FBI being treated like a tethered goat, apparently, by his own administration, being left to twist in the wind, I am certain, I could be wrong, but my gut is that he's under orders to not answer anything about anything so you get the I don't knows.
Yeah, I mean, obviously something's very, very wrong, and no matter what the reason is, it's not good, and you know, I expect more from the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Well, but understand that there's still a component of the executive branch. There was a wonderful, there's a wonderful Yiddish expression: when the fish goes bad, it smells from the head.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look at that, and I got to tell you what I did. I don't know if you saw the interview that I did with Neil Cavuto yesterday, but
no, I didn't, Mike.
Well, it was kind of funny because I rushed in. It was such a last-minute thing. They didn't even they weren't able to send the car. So usually when you're going into the studio, you have time to sit in the back of the limousine and think to yourself, all right, how do I want to cover the issue? What do I want to say? Here I drove myself. They had one of their interns sit in the car. I parked the car in front of the studio with a fire hydrant, and I ran in to do my interview. Barely got in the time. So I didn't have time to give it much thought. But as I was heading for the studio, it dawned on me, and I said this on the air. And in fact, I've got an email out there to the folks. It's on my website, michaelcutler.net, and you can go to the Fox News website, and they have it posted. But I said to Neil, wouldn't it be something if an alien who was illegally present in the United States reacted to correspondence from DHS with the same concern that an American who's law-abiding reacts to a letter from the Internal Revenue Service?
Right, right.
And Neil said, wow, I never thought of putting those together, but you're right. So understand what we've done. We have foreign nationals in our country who violated the terms of their admission or who violated the whole process by evading the inspections program. We don't know who they are, why they're here, operating with impunity, promised all sorts of goodies like identity documents and authority to work and the ability to bring family members here. And they're violating the law by being here, but yet American citizens who are abiding by the law, minding their own business, but proclaim themselves to be political conservatives, are apparently under fire from a very powerful agency. You know, he who taxes has tremendous power over you. You know, death and taxes, right? And that's the IRS.
Absolutely.
And I'm not a conservative, and I have to tell you, as a registered Democrat, I have steam pouring out of my ears, and every American should, because I'm going to tell you, folks, if you're grammatically challenged and you can only conjugate verbs in the first person singular, and if it doesn't affect you, you don't care, well, this does affect you, because the political pendulum is always in motion, and it swings to the left, and it swings to the right, and it swings back again. This kind of precedent is very frightening and disturbing. Am I getting that wrong?
Yeah. Well, it's the politicization of law enforcement, and that should frighten everyone.
Absolutely should scare you witless. You know, Lady Justice is supposed to be blindfolded for a good reason. But under this administration, she's clearly at least peaking, if not more. But in any event, you know, I started raising an issue when you called in, and I'm delighted to have you join me. It's always great to speak with you. The question that's not being asked, besides the fact that we don't know what names these people really have, and we don't know how many there really are, and we won't know when they really got here. I mean, there's a lot of we don't knows. Here's a couple of questions that I would love somebody to ask Mr. Rubio, who, by the way, seems to have two versions of the story, depending on whether he's delivering the speech in English or Spanish, which I find more than disturbing, which is another reason why I really believe we need a national language so that everybody gets the same story. I mean, this is astonishing that Rubio has one version for the Spanish-speaking audience versus the English-speaking audience version. Wow.
Yeah.
But here's my question.
Well,
if you find people that are here illegally because they apply and by some miracle they determine that some guy has a rap sheet or he's ineligible, do they have the resources or a mechanism in place to actually take these people into custody and either prosecute them if appropriate or deport them if appropriate? I'm going to suspect the answer is no. And the other question, and tell me what you think of this doozy. If a guy is here illegally, or a gal from some other country, I don't care if it's Mexico or England or France or Spain or Africa or Asia, you know, we're not just talking about Mexico. We've got to be very clear, folks. The immigration laws are not about Mexico. It's about people who are not citizens. That's what the word alien means. If you have somebody who knows that they have an extensive rap sheet, so they don't apply for the benefit, and we may well have a couple of million of those. What are we going to do with those who still remain in those proverbial shadows? Who's going to look for them? And you know what the answer to that is? Nobody. This is purely about giving away to whom they can give away and ignoring those people who don't come forward. How's that for an interesting question?
Yeah, and the other thing, Mike, and I think you mentioned this before, even when they do, let's say they catch someone who has been making fraudulent identification cards, either driver's license or birth certificates or whatever, they never seem to go after people that receive those documents. They make the arrest the person who is producing them, but they let the hundreds or thousands of people, you know, they let them go.
Yep, and those people are actually co-conspirators. The same thing with smuggled aliens, the same thing when they have fraud rings. You know, what they really need to do is to show people that there are penalties to violating the law. You know, we're familiar with the no-win situation, right? Well, the illegal aliens in the United States today are in the opposite situation. They're in a no-lose situation.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. You know, every time I hear them say they're hiding in the shadows, you know, I want to choke because I see them at Walmart, I see them at the beach, I see them at
the
Fourth of July
festival. Well, I have a better one. I see them at the protest, and I see them at the White House. Illegal alien who introduced the president to the United States. It was a bunch of illegal aliens who sat in the Oval Office with Obama and Biden. And I'd like to know if he'd be as willing to let my kids come to the White House, because I have two kids in college. One is an undergraduate, one's in graduate school. Do you think they're going to be invited to the White House anytime soon? They're American citizens. I can't imagine that they want American citizens coming to the White House.
Yeah. Well, and Mike, a personal experience I had, it was a May Day number 5-6 years ago.
Yep.
I was downtown Cleveland. They were having a pro-amnesty, pro-illegal alien amnesty rally on Cleveland Public Square. I'm across the street with a sign that says, "I support American labor." They sent an illegal alien over to mirror me. Everywhere I went, this guy was following me. And here I am, an American citizen, an Ohio resident, and a news crew came by, pulled me aside, said, "Come with us, you know, before you get injured." And, you know, this is happening in the United States, and people need to realize that, our rights are being violated by people who aren't even supposed to be here. And unfortunately, there are many public officials who are assisting them with this.
Oh, listen. And if you look at the law, it's aiding, abetting, encouraging, and inducing, and those are felonies. And when you have cities that say, well, if you're an illegal alien, don't worry, we're not going to tell the police you're here. And if the cops stop you, no one cares about your immigration status. Could you imagine if you didn't pay your income taxes? Or could you imagine if you had an outstanding warrant because of whatever violation of law and you got pulled over by the police? Could you imagine the cops announcing, well, we're not going to honor federal warrants in our jurisdiction? No way in God's green earth would they do that or get away with it. But when they say that we will not do anything about the immigration laws, they get an attaboy from the administration.
Yeah, there's two-tier justice in the U.S. now, and I can tell you what, if you're in the country illegally, you have a better chance of being set free than if you were a U.S. citizen. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, whether it's driving without a license. You know, Don Rosenberg's son was killed by an alien who was under temporary protected status. And here's something else, folks. I want to give you something to think about. When there's a national catastrophe or natural catastrophe in a country, an earthquake, a tsunami, a volcano, whatever, tornadoes, hurricanes, all kinds of terrible things. Very often we'll say to the people from those countries, if they're here, we're not going to send you home. Now, you stop and think about it, and you say, well, that sounds fair, their countries are falling apart. You know, what are we going to do? We're trying to be humanitarian. Well, here's my thoughts on this. Now, you tell me what you think, Steve. If you're dealing with children or old men or women and so forth, and you say, look, we know that your country is in a state of shambles, we're going to let you stay here. I think that's reasonable until things get squared away. But why in the world would you allow able-bodied illegal aliens from those countries to stay here to do day labor and put roofs on houses and buildings in the United States when their skills and ability as construction workers is desperately needed back in their home country to put their country back together again?
Well, you know, Mike, your problem is you're making too much common sense.
I mean, isn't this astonishing to say to somebody, yes, we know that you're good with concrete and we know you're a great carpenter, but you can work on houses in the Bronx. Don't even think about going back to El Salvador.
Yeah, well, and the reason is it's the politicization of many parts of the federal government. They want these folks here, and to support. As you're a registered Democrat, as I believe I am also, and
yep.
to support the Democratic Party.
And you have the Republicans doing it so that they can provide cheap labor to the people that make their contributions.
And that's
it's both sides of
the
aisle, folks. We didn't get here from a one-sided problem. You look at the two parties, and I call them bad and worse, except I'm not sure which one is which.
Yeah, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is certainly a problem. And you know, you mentioned the Discover America program.
Did you check it out?
Yes, I did. You know, you look at people who are on, or the people and or corporations that are on the board and the steering committee. You have a real good idea who's preventing common sense immigration enforcement in the United States.
Now, isn't it remarkable that we have taken a component of national security and put it in the hand of businessmen? I find it remarkable that a bunch of businessmen are telling the U.S. government how they're supposed to expand the visa waiver program that removes an important layer of security. On 9/11, there were 26 or 27 countries whose citizens did not need visas to come here. We are now up to 37 countries. Oh, and by the way, comprehensive reform would add to the list of countries whose citizens would not need visas to come to America.
Yeah. Well, I heard with Senate Bill 744, the people at the table were the U.S. Chamber of Commerce people, AFL-CIO, and then I'm trying to remember who I heard it from. Someone said it was actually, I don't know, it was written by LaRaza or, you know, that.
I'm sure that they are. But
folks, I don't know if that's
union
true
representing-
or not.
I wouldn't doubt it, but the union representing the ICE agents was told to keep on walking. They had no voice.
Yeah, the people who would know most about it that didn't even bother asking to go to the table. And even worse, they threw Chris Crane out of the congressional hearing a press conference for trying to ask a question.
I didn't see that. I missed that, but I wouldn't doubt it for a bit. And he's a very low-key, very professional, button-down kind of guy. I'm very impressed by him. I've watched him. He's terrific. I just find this astonishing. And they referred to the illegal aliens and their advocates as stakeholders. American citizens aren't stakeholders of what happens to America?
Right. I mean, that's an insult to every American citizen. And, you know, Mike, the astonishing thing to me was Chris Crane is a federal law enforcement officer.
That's
he was escorted. He was chairman of the committee. They had him escorted out by the Capitol Police. Can you imagine that? For asking a question. He just raised his hand. He was polite, everything else.
He's not an obstreperous kind of guy. He's no firebrand. No, as I said, he's a button-down professional.
Yeah.
That's astonishing.
Yeah. I mean, that's how bad it is, how bad the situation is. And who better to know, or at least, you know, should have a seat at the table, why wouldn't the people, you know, why wouldn't Rubio want to have Chris Crane at the table? You know, I think your listeners should ask themselves that particular question.
Well, the answer, I think, is self-evident. They don't want someone there who's going to contradict them with the truth.
Right, right.
Don't confuse
exactly.
me with the facts. I have an agenda, and don't you dare get up and tell me that I'm wrong. Don't you dare ask those questions. And, you know, the point to questions, folks, JFK once had a great saying. He had a bunch of great sayings. I was a big fan of JFK. I think he was the last decent president we ever had. But JFK said you judge a man's intelligence not just by his answers, but even more by the questions that he asks. And if you think about it, when we send space probes out into the solar system, and we are orbiting other planets, and we're going out past Pluto. We've got the mission to Pluto. They'll be there, I guess, in 2 years. I can't wait to see what that looks like. But what you always get by sending those space probes out are the next series of questions. The questions that need to be raised are vital. Instead of listening to the propaganda and the nonsense that we keep hearing from these eight gangsters, it's vital that we, the people, get our voices heard and get the questions answered. And, you know, these politicians are being very foolish. You know, there's that old saying, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. The American people need to make it clear to these politicians that we will vote them out of office if they vote for this legislation and follow through. And follow
right. And, you know,
through.
Absolutely. And I think something that I, you know, we need to emphasize to anyone who's all the people listening to your program is that, you know, you need to get on the phones and call these people. You're members of Congress. You're not only your U.S. senators, but you're members of the U.S. House of Representatives. Visit
yep.
their offices if that's possible. And not just once. You really need to do it consistently because if this bill passes, it's, in my opinion, we're in real trouble. And this is like the last nail in the coffin when you consider what the effects of chain migration will be and all the other problems associated with this.
And the terrorists who will have gotten identity documents and the criminals who will have embedded themselves in the country.
Right, right. And Mike, have you mentioned at all, and are you aware about the D.C. March for Jobs?
This is really important. It's funny. I'm just looking at the flyer as you're saying it. We're on the same frequency, Steve.
Okay.
On Monday, July 15th, there's going to be at Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C., a demonstration. And if you want to check it out, the website, folks, get your crayons out. I used to work for the government, so they don't give me anything sharp to write with anymore. It's DCMarchForJobs.com. One word, www.DCMarchForJobs.com. Or if you want, you can call. I'll give you a phone number for you to call. Again, the phone number is 202-349-0858. The website is DCMarchForJobs.com, or you can call 202-349-0858. We really and truly need to get our voices heard. This is not about xenophobia. This is about the future of our children. They want to quadruple the number of authorized temporary, so-called temporary workers over what the amnesty of 07 would have permitted, or 06. That's insanity. We have Americans by the millions who are out of work, unemployed, underemployed, losing their homes to foreclosure. And this marches lockstep with what Alan Greenspan had to say. Alan Greenspan, and I've talked about him before, and I'm going to talk about him real quickly once again, testified for Chuck Schumer at a hearing on April 30th, 2009, and he made the point of saying that we needed to open up the quotas for immigration because he referred to Americans with skills as the privileged elite. I mean, this was so astonishing to me. He made two points. One, he talked about the need to bring in people to live in the houses that were lost to foreclosure. American families are out of the houses. And let me read it to you. Let me read to you Greenspan's words so you won't think I'm somehow misleading you. He talked about opening up quotas and bringing people in, highly skilled immigrants. And he said, first, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will of necessity move into vacant housing units, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes. And, of course, house price decline are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and the plunge in the value of a vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities. impurities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of the banking system. So he creates this policy because in 2005 he stood before the Federal Reserve Bank as the director and said, I have this great idea. We're going to provide subprime mortgages to the immigrants, meaning illegal aliens. And he talked about how they would spread the risk over a broad base so that everybody would just assume a little bit of the risk. Well, that little bit of the risk was these house of cards that came fluttering down when the market and the banking system got unhinged. So he's talking about how we're going to beef up the banks now by bringing in foreign families to live in the houses Americans used to live in. And then he said, and this really blows my mind, greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled, and that's exactly what comprehensive reform does, would lower wage premiums. Wage premiums, my backside, the salaries. Forget about wage premiums. Would lower the salaries of skilled over the lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism. In the process, we have created a privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Privileged elites. So if you are a school teacher, folks, or a nurse, or an engineer, or a skilled tradesman, like my dad, a plumber, or an electrician, you, in Mr. Greenspan's eyes, are the member of the privileged elite. And he said that eliminating the restrictions on quotas would reduce at least some of our income inequality. What's his goal? No matter how big your education, no matter how much effort you put into educating yourself, acquiring the degrees or the skills, you should not get more money than the guy who dropped out of high school.
Yeah.
It's the end of the middle class.
Yeah, Greenspan seems to think that the privileged elite is actually the upper lower income group, upper lower income or middle income families.
The middle income. Yeah, he doesn't see himself as that. He's above all that.
Mike, that doesn't sound like the privileged elite to me.
It isn't, and it's such an outrage. I couldn't believe I was watching and hearing it, and you can go to my website, michaelcutler.net, and I know that Caps Web has posted it on their website. I was on a radio show the day after the hearing, and I was hot. I mean, I was steaming hot. And the young lady whose program I'm on, I guess, sensed the fact that I was in a state of white heat. And she said to me, Mike, what were you thinking when you watched Greenspan? And I said, you know, I had the sense that I was witnessing the first time I'd ever seen anybody testify before Congress while suffering from rigor mortis.
That link's on your website?
It's in the commentaries that are available on my website.
Okay, I'll have to put that on my website as well because I think the public really needs the opportunity to see that.
I mean, it's just an outrage beyond words to refer to hardworking middle-class Americans as the privileged elite and saying that they got to trim their wage premium. Yeah, anything above the minimum wage is your wage premium.
Right.
Can you imagine that?
I mean, they want to produce an underclass that they call the privileged elite. And I mean, what is his class then? I mean, you know.
If you want my honest opinion, he has no class. How do you like that one? He's classless.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned about illegals getting mortgages and all that. I remember a case in California. This illegal alien made $11 an hour, and he was able to get a mortgage. I think it was for $450,000.
Say this again?
Obviously, he was unable to pay his mortgage, and I actually worked for a law firm and dealt with a lot of the foreclosure issues, and I tell you what, the people who were responsible were people like Barney Frank and Matt, not the only ones, but they really they pressured the banks to make bad loans, and they got these bad mortgages, and they knew they were bad, so they packaged them, sold them, and then Standard and Poor's and people like that, if they gave them a bad rating, they didn't do business with them. So what Standard and Poor's and the like, what they did, started giving them, you know, as A-rated securities. And anyway, it brought down the whole system, as everybody found out a few years ago.
That's unbelievable. Look, you can't possibly imagine. I mean, what we are dealing with now is mind-boggling. You know, I'm a Democrat because my parents were. You know, you kind of get religion the same way you get your at least initial political party affiliation. And I always saw the Democrat Party as the party for blue-collar Americans, union members. I believe in most unions. Some unions I have real issues with. But the trade unions, and I believe that civil servants need unions. I just don't think civil service unions in the cities and states should be allowed to get involved in making campaign contributions. They're not allowed to do it in the federal government under the Hatch Act, and they need comparable legislation in cities and states. But certainly, civil servants need the protection of a union to protect them against unscrupulous employers and unscrupulous situations. I mean, and you know, Chris Crane is a dynamite example of how important unions are, because he is the guy on the inside who can get the word out to those folks who are on the outside. So those unions are important, that every American should support Chris Crane and the immigration union, because he is the guy who's trying to get the word out so that Americans understand just how they're being betrayed by this administration.
Right. Now, what was the other union? It was with citizenship.
For USCIS, Citizenship and Immigration Services, and they're furious over how they're being screwed over. You know, I had one of my former colleagues on this program a while back, Jerry Casale. He was on twice with me, and I have that up there. You go to the Michael Cutler Hour podcasts, you know, where they have the archives of the shows, and we talked about the adjudications process. It just takes minutes. It takes minutes to approve an application, hours or days to deny an application. So if you're chasing your backlog, really what you're telling the people that they have to do is approve almost everything that lands on their desk.
And that's what happened in 86, would you agree?
Absolutely, and then it happened even more with the Clinton administration, with Citizenship USA, where they were actually calling up district directors, according to the allegations, and telling them that if they did not approve, not adjudicate, they didn't say clear up the backlog, they told them you have to approve or you will be fired. We will leave you at the curb like yesterday's garbage.
Right. And consider the volume, the much smaller volume they had in 1986 versus 2013.
There's
absolutely no way that they're going to be rubber stamping all these applications.
They're just going to get a machine. You know how a stamp machine puts postage stamps on an envelope? That's how the approval stamps are going to be working.
Yeah.
They'll be humming right along. And
exactly.
Meanwhile, by the way, without comprehensive reform, do you know that they are now processing more than 6 million applications per year?
How many?
Without more than 6 million.
Yeah.
This is Lucy at the Bonbon Factory on steroids.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's going to, it has implications, you know, national security implications and other implications to American workers and, you know, crime and everything. And you know, it's.
And by the way, with all the talk about what illegal alien, quote-unquote, kids are entitled to, why in the world, especially with Obama's life experience, isn't he giving a second thought to the plight of American kids living in poverty today in inner cities in Appalachia, all over America? 1 in 6 American families is living below the poverty line collecting food stamps. Why is no one looking at this and saying, we need to provide opportunities for American kids? We're being told if we don't import foreign workers, the idiots in America won't be able to cut it. Well, let me tell you, the only evidence that I could see for that is, folks, those of you who voted for these knuckleheads are probably as dumb as they're claiming all of America is. That's the only thing I get. And this isn't about political party. It's about not doing your homework to know who in blazes you're voting for.
Right. And, you know, Mike, I interviewed a daughter of parents who were in the U.S. illegally a couple of weeks ago, and I asked her about her family situation. She said, well, her family came in illegally, but they got the amnesty they benefited from the amnesty in 1986. So I inquired about what they thought about this amnesty now. You know, do they support this amnesty, you know, for others? Absolutely. Then I asked her, did she support this amnesty? Well, obviously she did because she was at a rally to do this. And then what people need to understand is every time you pass this amnesty, those children will never support immigration law enforcement, and that is a serious problem, and it's a thing that people don't think about.
Well, you're right. It's about anarchy. And as I've said before, this is also about aiding, abetting, encouraging, and inducing. The idea that we are allowing people into the United States to violate who violate the laws and then reward them, this is astonishing. By the way, we're getting towards the end of the program. I just want to read. This was on February 1st, 2013. U.S. News and World Report editor Mort Zuckerman made an interesting statement, but he won't talk about immigration either, you see. They talk about unemployment. No one's talking about the fact that we are bringing in over 150,000 lawful workers and potential workers every month with visas who have the authority to work. We give out almost 100,000 green cards per month. And yes, while many of them are children, God willing, they will grow up and get to the age where they can then work in the United States. There are plenty of folks in the pipeline who are getting to that age. So we are admitting 100,000, close to 100,000 green cards a month, and then tens of thousands of foreign workers with H-1B visas and J-1 exchange visitors, foreign students who get practical training and so forth. So we often bring in more foreign workers than the number of jobs created each month. And here's what Zuckerman said. This is an interesting point. Today, millions are assisted by checks from Social Security and by food stamps. Food stamp enrollment has been rising at the rate of 400,000 per month. More than 47 million Americans now depend on that program, an almost incredible record for its 15% of the population compared with the 7.9% who received food stamps from 1970 to 2000. Meanwhile, nearly 11 million Americans are now collecting federal disability checks from Social Security, and half have signed on since President Obama came to office. In 1992, there was one person on disability for every 35 workers. Today, it is one of every 16. Such an increase simply cannot be caused by direct disability experience during employment. This is, in effect, another unemployment program, one without end. Many of the people on disability would normally be considered unemployed. And he also made another interesting point where he said that the poverty that we see around us today is worse than the Depression, except back then the people who were out of work were waiting on bread lines and soup lines. Today they sit home and wait for their checks, so you don't see them, but they're there.
All right.
Absolutely astonishing, isn't it?
Yes, it is, but, if you're through all my reading, I see it on a daily. Unfortunately, I read about it on a daily basis.
Say this again, I'm sorry.
I said, Mike, unfortunately, just from reading reading the news, I see this on a daily basis.
Well, I realize that, but I hope that my listeners out there are starting to pay more attention. Folks, it's really vital that you get involved. You need to make the phone call starting on Monday morning. You need to check out the website dcmarchforjobs.com, or please call the number, that phone number, if you have your pen handy, is 202-349-0858, 202-349-0858. You can tell them, in fact, that I gave you the phone number on my program. Give them a call. Find out what the story is. We'd love to have you join us all in Washington. It's vital that we take it seriously. There will be no taking the toothpaste or putting it back in the tube if they do this. This is a one-way trip to catastrophe. We could be looking at tens of millions of immigrants legalized without any ideas to who they are, creating incredible competition for jobs that won't be able to take care of the people who are here now. Understand that this would be transformational. When Obama said that he was going to transform America, he is now trying to make good on that promise. And I don't say this as a conservative. I have been a Democrat since I cast my first ballot 45 years ago. And I am telling you, this is a nightmare scenario playing out right now. I'll give you the final word here, Steve.
Well, Mike, basically, people need to know that Mike Cutler is not exaggerating. He's played this issue for 10 years. He's been in the INS for, 30 years of experience. And people need to pay attention and take action. If you do not take action, this is what it will happen. What Mike is saying will happen. It's not it might happen or maybe it will happen. It will happen. And with that, Mike, I'll let you close your show, and I appreciate the time to spend some time with you today.
Good visiting with you. I thank you, Steve. Again, happy Father's Day to you. Have a wonderful weekend, and thanks for all of your efforts. It's greatly appreciated. And send my regards to your friends there in the legislature in Ohio.
I will certainly do that. Have a good evening. Bye.
Yep, you too. So long. Well, that was Steve Salvi. Look, folks, please understand the issue. And I want to make a point that's really vital. We have got to look at our neighbors who are our neighbors, their fellow Americans. I don't care if they're Democrats. I don't care if they're Republicans. We need to engage them in an honest, open conversation. The Founding Fathers talked about freedom of press, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, very important. But they also talked about the right to seek redress of grievances. We will be doing that next month in Washington. And they talked about the need for, or the right, for peaceable assemblage. The point to peaceable assemblage is to engage in debate, discussion, discourse, if need be, argument. Just leave your clubs, your knives, and your guns at home. Peaceable. So we need to do that. And your neighbors who disagree with you on other issues, that's fine. Put the other issues aside. If we don't gain control over the borders of the United States and we don't get the immigration laws enforced, we will be driving the bus off the cliff and there will be no going back. I know that everybody feels strongly pro or con, whether it's gay rights, whether it's abortion, whether it's school prayer. We can go down the list. Those issues pale by comparison with immigration. This undermines national security to the point that it virtually makes the gallantry and the efforts, the expenditure of vast levels of money for the military almost moot. Understand that the military's mission is to keep our enemies as far from our shores as possible. We are inviting people into this country without any way of knowing who they are or what their ultimate goals are. This is the stuff of nightmares. Everybody makes the presumption, or many people used to make the presumption, well, immigration is just about, picking up people that want to mow lawns and bag groceries and put roofs on houses. It's far more than that. It's far more than that. This is about national security. I spent half my career with the Drug Task Force. I was up at DEA Intelligence. And back in 1988, I decided to do an analysis of arrest statistics. And to my horror, found that back then in New York City, roughly 60% of the people that we were arresting for drug trafficking were foreign-born. Nationally, 30%. These are huge numbers, and the impact is inestimable. This isn't about vilifying immigrants. This is simply about saying that we need to make certain that the immigration laws are enforced and that they live up to the purpose for which they were enacted, to protect innocent lives and protect the jobs of American workers. There is nothing anti-immigrant about being pro-American. It's common sense, but you know how common sense flies in Washington these days? Not very well at all. I thank you so much for spending the hour and, almost 20 minutes. Time flies when you're having fun with me this Friday. Again, I wish all of you fathers out there happy Father's Day. hope all of you have a wonderful weekend, a peaceful weekend. I thank you for joining me. Look forward to being with you in the future. Next week, I hope to have a guest host. I will be in Washington with Act for America, speaking on the nexus between immigration and national security. So I will not be doing the program next week. Again, I hope to have a guest host, and if so, those of you on my list for emails will be getting an email telling you whether or not. But meanwhile, I certainly will be back the following Friday, no matter what. But next week, I'll be heading for Washington, D.C. So meanwhile, folks, have a great weekend. I ask you to remember that democracy is not a spectator sport. See you next time. Good night, everybody.